There, do you have any idea what you're listening to?
London Philharmonic?
It's Venus.
Huh?
Venus.
Why not? We bounced signals off the moon's surface. There's no reason that Venus shouldn't radiate impulses.
I don't mean the static. Can't you hear it, the other thing?
What other thing?
Listen to it, Paul. Listen to the voice.
Welcome to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Riesmanell, and I'm your host. On today's program, developing open source web applications for the future of journalism. I'll be talking about the Knight Foundation's Drupal initiative, which is funding the programming of the next generation of journalism tools. You do want to stay tuned. You know, as we've been talking about here on the Media Geek radio show for quite some time, journalism, at least commercial mainstream journalism, seems to be having some trouble. Newspapers are declaring bankruptcy, or they are laying off reporters, shutting down newsrooms left and right. Many two newspaper cities, like Denver, Colorado, are becoming one newspaper cities, and many one newspaper cities are threatened to become no newspaper cities. At the same time, a great deal of interest in online tools. Blogging has taken off in the last 9 years. New microblogging tools like Twitter are at least capturing the interest of many people looking for how we can continue to have quality journalism in an online age. But one of the things we need underneath all of that are the tools to make it happen. It might be blogging, it might be Twitter, or it might be something new. And that something might come out of the Knight Drupal Initiative, which is a new initiative with the Knight Foundation, working with the Drupal organization, people behind an open source content management system. Funding with over $480,000 in 2009. Six different projects to create the next generation of online journalism tools. To find out more, I spoke with Jose Zamora, who is a program associate in the journalism program with the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation. And to help set the scene, Jose tells us more about, first, what is the Knight Foundation?
Knight Foundation was founded by the Knight brothers. They used to own the second largest newspaper chain in the U.S. And they created the foundation with basically two goals. One was to give something back to the communities that had given them so much. So in that area, we do economic development, culture, arts, education, civic engagement. And then we have a journalism program, which is worldwide. And with that, we try to promote good quality journalism and freedom of the press. So in the last few years, we've been trying to do initiatives that speed media innovation. And as one of those initiatives, we started a contest called the Knight News Challenge. In the second year of the contest, which is a contest that seeks projects that will speed media innovation and ask for any proposals that use three criteria, which are to use digital media to distribute news and information in geographic determined areas. So in the second year, we received many proposals that we're going to use as the base for the project Drupal software. And some projects were basically the same project, and both of them used Drupal. We are not the experts on Drupal, and we knew that there was a community behind the open source software. So we started doing a little bit of research. We found out that they had a big conference. We contacted them. We went to the conference, and we told them what we had seen, that there was this trend of individuals and organizations using their software to do these projects, and that we didn't know what project was the best one to choose. So we asked for their help, and we started another contest called the Night Drupal Initiative. So the main goal was to make their content management system, or their CMS, as easy as possible to use, so that we could lower the barriers to online publishing. The community created the application process. They received the applications, they vetted them, and they sent us their top choices. And recently we funded 6 of them, and they are going to start being developed in the upcoming months.
So you worked very closely then with this existing community of programmers and developers who work on this open source platform, Drupal. You really kind of handed a lot of the, you worked really hand in hand, didn't you?
Yes, actually, and I would go a little bit farther than that, and to say that the community is amazing, and that it was a truly remarkable experience for us because they did most of the work. These contests are really time-consuming, and they did everything, and it was really impressive to be able to tap into this community of programmers who are the experts on this field, and see that they could run all this process, and that they improved the quality of our grants for this purpose. Because they really know the community, they know the Drupal open source software, and what their open source software needs to lower the barriers to online publishing. So working with them was really a really good experience.
Well, my understanding of Drupal is that it provides kind of like this common platform, so people can more easily, I guess, create websites and create things like blogs or podcast sites or wikis, right? User editable sites or interactive websites, you know, more easily than if you had to start from scratch and kind of program everything yourself. And I think that's why it's so popular with developers, because it gives them sort of a common set of tools, right? So they don't have to reinvent the wheel in order to come up with interesting new applications for it.
Yes, exactly. It's basically a software that allows you to build many types of different websites, depending on what you as an individual or your organization wants to do. So you can go to Drupal.org, and you can download the basic platform, and then you can also find there different modules that are specific for what you want to do with your website or blog or the website of your organization.
Why was it important for the Knight Foundation to work with this open source community rather than, say, choosing to work with other developers who might develop a similar sort of software, but one that might be more proprietary, less open to being altered or changed, or less open even, I guess, to having its engine shared? Why was choosing an open source platform like Drupal so important for Knight?
First let me say that we're open to working with everybody, but working with Drupal was specifically important because of the community behind it. In the past years, their community has been growing. They have a conference, for example, every year. The first conference, there were like 60 community members. Now they have 1,400. They have a community now of registered users at their Drupal.org site of 3,500 users, and they have 1.5 million page visits a month. So the community is very engaged, and that's what made us want to work with them, because they are behind it. They really want to make it accessible to everyone. And then we go back to the open source, which we think open source is the best way to develop all these projects. And because when you have a proprietary system, first it can cost a lot of money, and then it's not accessible to everyone. So by using open source software, we were able to fund this basic platform that anybody can use.
So, for example, can you tell me about some of the winners of the contest and the type of applications which they will be building for doing journalism online?
First, one project that is very important, it's a documentation project. Project will be done by Addison Berry. She's a very active community member. And what it will do is basically create easy to understand instructions on how to download Drupal, to set the basic website and set the process that anybody who is going to create a new module can use to write the instructions on how to use it. So that one will definitely lower the barrier to entry. Then we have a project that is probably closer to a turnkey solution, which is a project that will create a website, basically pretty much like a news site that will be connected to Facebook. So it will allow anyone to, with one click, do a news site and distribute the content of the news site through Facebook. At the same time, it will allow the news site to gather information about the social network.
So I see that it looks like one of your goals is to help integrate news gathering into things that people are already using or things that people are already doing.
Yes. Another example is has to do a project with microblogging, which is sending brief text updates like Twitter. So it will create a Twitter-like feature in Drupal that anyone will be able to add to the Drupal site, and that will allow to connect with other providers of such products. So, for example, if you are going to build a site that will have the Twitter feature, you will be able to, from your Drupal site, send all your text updates to any other service that uses microblogging, and to receive on your website the text updates from all the other services.
So the goal with this software, is it then that it will now be freely available to any organization that would want to run it and implement it so that they can do all of these things?
Yes, exactly. So it will be available to anyone who wants to use it to publish online.
So this is very much, it seems to me, kind of a so-called citizen journalism project in a lot of ways. Is that accurate?
I do think it allows citizens to publish news about their communities, which is extremely important, and every day it's more important. But it's also new tools that the news industry will be able to use.
So if a local newspaper wanted to implement these tools when they're completed, that would be something permissible as well?
Yes, yes, it is. And actually, that's something we hope that happens. From one side, we think all these tools are very valuable for citizens because they might want to publish news about their local area, news that aren't being covered by the main news organizations in their city. But they are also very important for news organizations, and we want them to use it because of what's going on in the economy, and even before that, with what has been going on in the news industry. Many newspapers and news organizations haven't had the necessary funding to do research and development. We have had the opportunity to do this research and development, and it's for everyone. And we are part of the news industry, and one of our main focuses is journalism. We do that with both the intentions of helping citizen journalism and news organizations.
So no matter the source, what you're really hoping to do is to provide tools that allow journalists of all different types, working for all different sorts of organizations, to better use the internet to communicate and gather news, it sounds like.
Yes, exactly, because we are trying to speed media innovation. Every day, the web becomes more and more important. So citizens and news organizations and everyone needs to be on the web. The web is the new public square. Everybody needs to have access to both to the internet and to the tools. So this is an effort to get closer to that, and to make sure everyone has access to the tools and to be able to make their voice heard on the public square and participate in the decision-making process of what's going on in their communities, and that way strengthening democracy.
The Knight Foundation funded 6 projects. Can you tell me how much total funding there was?
It's around $500,000.
Wow.
This is an important investment in the Drupal community. But we are sure it's going to have a big impact because the community is behind all these projects and they are very active in making sure that the projects are good and in making sure they are known and accessible to everyone.
What's the timeline on these projects? How long before we start to see some of them become usable?
Well, they vary in time, but probably the one that will be available in the shortest time will be available in around 6 months, and they go from 6 months to a year. So the turnaround time is also going to be faster than developing any other software.
Wow, that's pretty quick.
That has to do with the community, because even though it's an individual member of the community that will be developing the project, the community is behind them, and it's so they are always giving feedback and making sure the project is the best it can be.
Sounds very exciting. I'm really looking forward to seeing the results of this. Jose, thank you very much for taking some time to share this with us.
Thank you, Paul, and it's been a pleasure talking with you.
That was Jose Zamora, a journalism program associate with the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation. And we were talking about the Knight Drupal Initiative, which has now given $480,000 to 6 different projects to use the Drupal open source content management system to make it more user-friendly and create projects specifically for online journalism. And you can learn more about the Knight Foundation News Challenge, which is a related journalism challenge, at newschallenge.org or at the knightfoundation.org. And you can learn more about the Knight Drupal Initiative at groups.drupal.org, or you can check out the Media Geek Twitter feed, where I've posted links to all of that, and it'll, of course, be posted with the radio show when it goes up at radio.mediageek.net. But the Media Geek Twitter feed is twitter.com/MediaGeek. And if you are using the Twitter, go ahead and tweet back and let me know what you think about this project of trying to create new tools online using open source software to help citizen journalism or conventional journalism perhaps help newspapers get online without having to build all that infrastructure themselves. Let me know at twitter.com/MediaGeek, or you can send plain old-fashioned email, the new snail mail, paul@mediageek.net. And, of course, mediageek.net is the home of the whole Media Geek enterprise. Right now, up there, you can read an interview with Ian F. Page, who is the man behind a project called The End of Television, where he is going to do on June 12th, the day that all analog TV signals, or at least full-power TV signals in the U.S., are turned off. He is going to have a one-day broadcast of user-submitted videos on an unused, newly unused analog TV channel in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. He was originally going to do it in February, when originally we were going to have the digital television transition, but as we all know, that got pushed back to June 12th, but it's still going to go off. So you can read that interview and learn more about that interesting project at MediaGeek.net, and we'll have Ian on closer to June 12th. To talk more about that project and see how it's coming along. Of course, radio show is at radio.mediageek.net. And this is Media Geek, your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. And my name is Paul Rees-Winnell, and I am your host. And actually, a recipient of grants from the Knight Foundation will be on the show next week. There's a great project here in Chicago called the Chi-Town Daily News, which is an online local news source. It's 3 years old, and it has a seven-person board of directors. It includes two Pulitzer Prize-winning journalists, as well as business and nonprofit leaders. And they have editors who work with citizen journalists and professional journalists covering the news of Chicago. Often, a lot of things that really get missed in the regular mainstream print press and television press, especially coverage of important issues like the Chicago Housing Authority, the Board of Education, and the Metropolitan Water Reclamation District. One of the founders of this project is Jeff Daugherty, who will be on the Media Geek show next week, and that should be a great conversation. I'm looking forward to learning more about some new approaches to journalism, especially online, to not merely be what often people accuse blogs of being, just reposting or commenting on news today, but actually going out and doing original reporting from in a grassroots fashion. So you'll definitely want to make sure to hear Media Geek next week when we talk to Jeff Daugherty of the Chi-Town Daily News. But one thing, you know, that I've been thinking about lately, as we see these new online news models and we see the rise of blogs and microblogging and increased emphasis on citizen journalism, is a lot of folks, I think, are unaware of some of the roots of so-called citizen journalism or so-called user-contributed journalism. Going back to, of course, community radio and non-commercial radio, then public access television, starting in the 1970s, giving non-professional, doesn't mean not good, just non-paid folks, the opportunity to be on television and reach an audience. And then, in the late 90s, the Independent Media Center movement, which is still going strong here, about to celebrate its 10th anniversary in November. The Independent Media Center was something that got off the ground at the same time as the WTO ministerial held in Seattle in 1999, and now known as the Battle in Seattle, when the WTO and local authorities were absolutely surprised by an incredibly huge mass protest, public uprising, in response to global trade policies and the way in which average people, in which citizen voices, in which democracy is largely shut out of these international trade organizations and international trade negotiations, which nevertheless have incredible and often devastating effects on local economies. The Independent Media Center was, at the time, an incredibly innovative effort to allow people to report directly with both text, photo, audio, and video, uncensored, in an immediate fashion. And while we take things like YouTube and blogs and Twitter for granted now here in 2009, I can't impress on you strongly enough how innovative it was in 1999 to have a website that would allow anyone to upload any of these media without it first being reviewed, without there being an initial censor. And to report at that time from the streets of Seattle and from the streets all over the world the news as people saw it and heard it, not having to be filtered, not having to make it into the mainstream. There were simply not the YouTubes. They did not exist in 1999. And so many of you who are over the age of 30 probably realize that, but a lot of folks have not thought about it that way. And it had me glued to my computer back then. And at the same time, there was coverage happening on Free Speech TV, which is a satellite channel made up of a lot of independent content. And there was also coverage distributed to community radio stations and to public access TV stations. And so much of that converged in an actual physical space in Seattle called the Independent Media Center, where there were broadband lines, where when broadband at home and was very hard to find, and the notion of mobile broadband really didn't exist, and the notion of Wi-Fi, wireless internet, really didn't exist. So a lot of people would come in and report and post stories, pictures, audio to the internet, which could then get redistributed and reused before the Creative Commons, often all put up there for free reuse. Really galvanizing and coalescing an amazing grassroots movement, which is still going on. And it goes on under the auspices of the Independent Media Center network, which now encompasses hundreds of websites and actual centers across the world. And it lives on in these other efforts, whether the founders realize it or the people involved realize it or not. So I hope a little later this year to get into that history and to talk to some folks who were there in Seattle in 1999 and to sort of assess the effects of this innovation of open publishing and how it has really shaped what the web has become today, so-called Web 2.0, even if not quite in the way in which anyone thought it would. And so that's something I'm going to continually be talking about here on Media Geek. So I hope you'll join me and also be blogging about it at MediaGeek.net. And that brings to close another edition of Media Geek. I'll be back in one more week with more news and views on our media environment. In the meantime, go to MediaGeek.net. It's home to the Media Geek blog, where you can read news and views that there isn't time for in the program, such as what I learned about what the Library of Congress is doing to preserve our motion picture legacy, and about Indianapolis cops who have turned themselves into radio pirates. That's MediaGeek.net. And of course, our radio show is at radio.mediageek.net, where you can listen to the MP3s or subscribe to the podcast. If you have comments about the program, please send them to me, paul@mediageek.net. And of course, the Twitter feed is at twitter.com/mediageek. I'll be asking questions, and I'd love to hear your opinion about all sorts of issues of importance to our media environment. That's twitter.com/mediageek. And the show originates at WNUR in Evanston, Illinois, at 89.3 FM. And it's also heard on community stations all around North America, like KWMD in Kasilof, Anchorage, Alaska, and CJUM in Winnipeg, Manitoba. The show is free to air for your local non-commercial community radio station. Just go to radio.mediageek.net for details. Thanks for tuning in.